Welcome to Spectrum from China America Hit Radio, a weekly public service production featuring news, information, and stories about China, our Chinese communities, and people with stories to tell about their Chinese lifestyle experiences. Now, here's this week's host, Steve Warren.
Good morning. Welcome to Spectrum. This is Steve Warren. I have a special guest with us again this week. This time, it's J.R. Martin. J.R. is the author of a book called Selling Us Out, Selling U.S. Out. Has a lot to do with telling us some stories and some backstories about why the trade deficit, why trade with different countries has maybe kind of gone south a little bit over the past couple of decades. Welcome to Spectrum, JR. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate you having me on the show.
Let's do a little background in order to, of course, come up with the authority to write any sort of a book about a subject as heady as this one. It takes a little background on your own. Give us a little bit of where you came from, where you went to school, where you grew up, how you came to where you are today.
Yes, well, I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I joined the Navy after graduating from high school, and I completed my master's degree before leaving the military. I worked in cryptology. After that, I spent the last 20-plus years working in international business, sales and marketing primarily, and I've traveled throughout the world. I've been on 5 of the 7 continents. I've done a lot of business in Asia. I've spent years in Japan and China and Taiwan and Singapore and Korea throughout that region.
Now, what have you been doing most recently since you've been back in the United States and since you've been putting together the idea to get this book out? What has been your business background that puts you in the trade arena?
Well, again, most of my business has been international trade or international business, and about 5 years ago, what led me to write this book is I was doing some consulting work for a company that was based in Singapore with factories in China, and I came across some things while I was working with them that caused me some concerns and caused me to do some investigation, and that's what led to the book. And so I've been, since my wife and I also own a business, we have our own business, and I've worked in the medical device industry as well here in the recent past, but my background in the international business, to be more specific, most of my background was in the computer and semiconductor business.
What was your actual expectations for writing the book? Was it to just tell stories that you wanted to tell, or was it to be proactive and create some sort of change?
Yeah, as proactive and create change. What I think needs to happen, and this is the main purpose of the book, is the United States needs to stop blaming other countries for its trade problems, and the United States needs to take a much more serious and active role in putting together a strategy in how it's going to manage its trade relationships with the rest of the world. We've been very complacent, and we don't have a strategy in other countries that we're competing against for market share and different businesses around the world. They do have strategies, and they're executing them very well, and they're doing to the detriment of the United States.
The book is called Selling Us, U.S. Out. The author is J.R. Martin. He's with us this morning on Spectrum. Tell me a little bit about the expectations of when you can see the trade picture starting to get away from us. I mean, is there a bell curve? Is there a point that it starts to accelerate and starts to get, in your estimation, bad for us?
Yeah, actually, it started back in the 1960s. Momentum started to shift away from the United States back in the 60s, and I explain all this in the book. But where the United States really started to get in trouble was in the late 70s. And what happened was we were preoccupied with the Cold War, with the former Soviet Union, and of course we had Vietnam winding down and other things going on geopolitically. And we really weren't paying a lot of attention to what other countries were doing as far as their strategies and how they were executing them as it pertained to industries that we were really leaders in and helped invent, or did invent in most cases. And so what we did was we were very distracted and really kind of arrogant in how we managed ourselves in business internationally. And unfortunately, that started to show in the numbers. Up until the late 1970s, the United States always had a trade surplus with the rest of the world. It wasn't a huge surplus. It was really kind of a balanced trade picture up until then. But starting in the late 1970s, along with the national debt that we started to accumulate, we started to also accumulate a trade deficit. And now that trade deficit is, the goods deficit is about $732 billion. That's the largest in the world. The next country below that is Turkey with a $70 billion trade deficit, and that was as of 2011. So, you know, put that in perspective, and well, before we started again running these deficits, in the late 1970s, we had about, I think it's about a $2 or $3 billion trade surplus, if I remember correctly. But would that quickly turn into a deficit because of our inattention to having an economic and trade strategy like other countries we're competing with had?
You've mentioned in the book that this is neither a Republican nor a Democratic problem, and over the time frame that you spoke about from the 60s on into the 70s, we had both Republican and Democratic administrations, which can rarely agree on anything. How could they have come together to have created situations and scenarios and agreements with other countries that impacted us so?
Well, you know, what I do say in my book, too, and in the introduction, this isn't a conspiracy. This is just a combination of a lot of really bad factors. And as it relates to the politics, they really didn't agree per se. Well, they did agree that both parties after World War II, they started down the path of what's been called free trade. And actually, when they first started down the path after World War II, it was the way it was originally conceived. It was a great idea. And that was, we wanted to try to lower trade barriers with other countries as much as possible, but the idea was that we wanted to have reciprocation. So in other words, if we lowered our tariff rate, say, to 7%, then we would expect that the other countries that we were exporting to would have the same tariffs in place, and they wouldn't have soft tariffs, which is explained in my book, and that's what a lot of countries ended up doing, and we didn't have an effective strategy for how to deal with that. So both parties agreed, and actually it was a good idea that we wanted to try to open up markets around the world, but unfortunately what happened was the U.S. opened up its markets, but a lot of other countries didn't and still haven't. And so we ended up putting ourselves at a disadvantage. And where both parties, where they sort of agreed, I guess you could say, was both parties were drawing funds from a lot of corporate interests and special interests that were making a lot of money, even though our trade policies were bad and hurting the U.S. economy. They were helping these companies and these special interests make a lot of money. They're making a lot of margins, exploiting low-cost labor and lack of environmental standards worldwide in a lot of these other countries. And so the politicians on both sides, what they have in common was they both like money, and both parties like money. So they were doing things that were not in the country's best interest, but in their party's best interest to serve the needs of the people that were contributing to their campaigns. And this is all explained in the book, and this is what led to the situation that we now find ourselves in.
Wanted to go back in time a little bit to World War II and then the era that followed that. Do you think we underestimated how quickly places like Korea, Japan, Germany could retool and get back into the industrial swing of things?
Yeah, we were arrogant, and I can't tell you how many times, both in my semiconductor career as well as in my medical device career, I've heard companies that I've worked for say, well, we don't need to worry about those guys. Their products are lower quality than ours. They're not as good as we are. They're not as good at engineering as we are, and so on and so forth. And it was funny. I remember when I was in the semiconductor industry, there was this little company in Taiwan called TSMC that started up when I was working for another big semiconductor company at the time. And I remember the people in my company saying, well, you know, those guys in Taiwan, they really don't have a lot of experience making semiconductors, and they're not very good, and their quality's not very good, so we don't see them as a huge threat. Well, guess who the number one manufacturer of semiconductors in the world is today? It's TSMC. So this is a lot of, I think, as a country and also as companies, a lot of times we grossly underestimated. We underestimated two things. We underestimated people's capability to come up a learning curve, and we also underestimated the strategies that they put in place, very smart strategies to target export sales to the United States, and how we didn't think about the people that we have been competing against. They think more like chess players. They're thinking 3, 4, 5 moves ahead. They're anticipating U.S. response to what they're doing, and they're prepared for it. And we don't. And that's because they have a strategy. And again, I don't blame them. I just blame us for not having a strategy and not being not anticipating what's going on because we don't have a strategy. So therefore, we find ourselves in the position that we're in right now.
Let's fast forward to some current day situations and a question that will evolve from that. One is, obviously, we've been watching the NFL big deal with their referees and officials being on strike. We've seen the teachers on the picket line in Chicago. Have the labor unions over the past several decades continued to raise the bar on industry that maybe has forced industry to look around for other labor resources?
Well, you know, that's an interesting point. It used to be, if you go back in our history, there's always been a labor differential between the U.S. and other countries, sometimes good, most of the times not good, as far as we've always been more expensive. But actually, we used to, the policies that we had in place before World War II, we always put a tariff in place to offset the cost in labor around the world because we looked at that as a positive thing for the U.S. economy. Actually, Theodore Roosevelt said in one of his speeches in 1910 that all of our economic and trade policies should be geared towards making sure that the U.S. economy and the U.S. wage worker, or for the well-being of the U.S. economy and U.S. wage worker, that they're taken care of. So I don't know. Again, absolutely, unions in our country and unions in other parts of the world have things got out of balance because they were too aggressive and unreasonable in demands. But again, what you don't want to do is work towards lowest common denominator. The other side of that spectrum is I've been to China many, many times. And I love the Chinese people, and I think Taiwan people, Chinese people, and you know, Asian people in general, they're good people. They're hardworking. They want the same things that all of us do. They want to have a good life for themselves. They want to have peace, and they want to have joy with their families. So, however, what I have seen in China, because of the political situation there, is I've been in these factories, like in the riots they're now having in Foxconn, where the workers are treated like slaves. I mean, this is basically slave labor that a lot of Americans don't understand and don't really appreciate what's going on in China. A lot of these workers, they're not there by choice. They're really there out of necessity. And there's a real issue. So it's the other end of the spectrum. So I would rather have a situation where workers, not just in the United States but around the world, they're treated with respect and dignity and they're paid a fair wage. And a wage that they can take care of themselves and their families. And they're not slave labor.
Our guest is J.R. Martin. He is the author of a book called Selling Us, U.S. Out. And the website for the book, J.R., would you like to give that to everybody?
Yes, it's www.sellingusout.org.
Well, thanks, J.R. You're going to be back with us next week on Spectrum. We'll continue our discussion about your book, Selling U.S. Out. That's Selling Us Out. I'm Steve Warren. This is Spectrum on China America Hit Radio.
Join us every weekend for Spectrum on China America Hit Radio, a weekly public service program that features news, information, and stories about China, our Chinese communities, and people with stories to tell about their Chinese lifestyle experiences. If you have some ideas for future topics and guests to be featured on Spectrum, we'd appreciate your suggestions. Email us at news@ChinaAmericaHitRadio.com. Then listen every Sunday for Spectrum at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time, exclusively on China America Hit Radio.